Welcome into another episode of Locked on Wolves. Today on the show, Tim Connelly's best and worst moves in charge of the Denver Nuggets front office. Welcome in. You are Locked on Wolves.
You are Locked on Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked on Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome into another episode of Locked on Wolves. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked on Wolves. Locked on Wolves is part of the Locked on Podcast Network, your team every day. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today on the show, I want to talk all about Tim Connelly's tenure in Denver, his best and worst moves over his near decade overseeing their front office. First, a big thank you for making Locked on Wolves your first listen every single day. Of course, Locked on Wolves is free and available everywhere, including YouTube, as well as all of your favorite audio platforms from Apple to Google, Spotify to Odyssey. You can find this show anywhere. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked on T-Wolves and at BBeacon with two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. We're spending most of the week talking all about Tim Connelly, the former Nuggets president of basketball operations and brand new Timberwolves president of basketball operations. He's not yet been introduced in the Twin Cities, but the Wolves, of course, confirmed the hiring earlier this week, and spent a little bit of time just kind of, you know, picking and choosing or kind of more of an overarching look at his draft history, some of the better moves he's made, what it means for him to come to the Timberwolves. And I want to get a little more in the weeds today on actually his best and worst moves. So I went through his transaction list. I go to prosportstransactions.com. They've got a really comprehensive list of literally everything that the Nuggets have done or any team has done over the past, for their entire franchise history. So I went through the Tim Connelly years, which is several pages on here, and pulled out what I think were his best moves. There's some that are really obvious, of course, but there's others that maybe have flown under the radar we haven't talked about much yet on this show. And then I also want to talk about some of his worst moves. And for that, I wanted a little bit of a Nuggets perspective. So I actually pulled an article by a Nuggets writer that we'll talk about here in a little bit to get some thoughts from. And then also working on scheduling probably this weekend a conversation with one of the co-experts, the co-site editors at Denver Stiffs, the SB Nation Nuggets blog. And that will likely run for either Monday or Tuesday's show next week. So we'll continue to get some additional Connelly coverage here as we work towards him being officially introduced. And then, of course, draft conversation is what's going to take over the next several weeks as well. So today on the show, though, let's talk about Tim Connelly. Let's talk about his best moves running the Denver Nuggets. We'll start with the obvious ones, right? The Nikola Jokic, and I'm going to go ahead and throw in the Monty Morris draft picks. Michael Porter Jr. obviously can be in that conversation too. But in terms of overall value, clearly Jokic and Morris are going to end up being his. I mean, I shouldn't say clearly. Obviously, the jury's still out on what Porter Jr. is actually able to do. But still, he was a mid-first round pick. The talent obviously was greater than that in terms of Porter. And the risk was really injury. And then now once he was extended early, now he did miss most of the season due to injury. So not sure what that overall value is going to be. I think that's obviously a plus transaction, right? Drafting Michael Porter Jr. at number 14 as a probably a top five lottery talent in that draft, top five draft pick talent in that draft. Taking him despite the injury concerns, time will tell if he's able to put together more of a full NBA career, if the injuries are going to continue to be an issue for him. But in terms of value, Nikola Jokic and Monty Morris were two fantastic selections by Tim Connelly and the Nuggets. Jokic, of course, being mid-second round, Morris being late second round, both extremely strong picks. Morris was a rotation guy, a key backup point guard in that conference finals run a couple of years ago, and this year was their primary starting point guard. And Jokic, of course, is now a two-time MVP. So those are the most obvious moves where if we just say, oh, what's he done? That's, you know, that's what's going to come to mind, right? But there's some others that have really flown under the radar. The first in my mind is actually the acquisition of Will Barton. And I know this might sound a little crazy, but they gave up almost nothing to get Will Barton. And he's been a key part of the rotation for basically his entire tenure there, minus his first season. He was acquired in his first full season on the job back in 2014 from Portland. Barton was a former second round draft pick of Portland. And Denver traded Aaron Aflalo, who was in his second go round in Denver on the wrong side of his prime, and Alonzo G, traded them to Portland and got Thomas Robinson, a first round pick, Victor Claver, and and Will Barton back. And that first round pick turned into Malik Beasley, which was obviously a solid draft pick as well, mid first round. But Will Barton's been a major part of what this team has done for the past better part of a decade. He immediately came in and was a rotation guy. He was kind of a sixth man extraordinaire for them for a few years, and since has been extended and he's been a starter the last couple of seasons. He's always been a guy I've liked as like a microwave scorer type guy, somebody who can actually, in a lot of ways, was similar to Malik Beasley, maybe a little bit more dynamic with the ball in his hands, and a little bit less consistent when it comes to actual three-point shooting percentage. But the talent has always been tantalizing, and even if he's been a little bit frustrating, I think Nuggets fans would say, especially since his second contract extension, you're talking about a guy who's now been like a five-year starter and a seven-year rotation guy for the Nuggets, has always, you know, in terms of volume, has been a solid scorer. Again, the efficiency hasn't been great, but to basically give up nothing, and again, Aaron Aflalo was, at the time of the deal, 29 years old, was his best years were already behind him, was in his second go-run in Denver, was shooting 33% from three that season. And they traded him off to Portland and got back a first-round pick plus Will Barton because Portland thought Aflalo was important to what they were trying to do at the time. And this was a clear win for Denver. And we could talk about the most recent contract extension, but the fact that they acquired a guy for almost nothing along with a first-round pick and then extended him to multiple contracts beyond that shows just how valuable he's been to their organization. So the Will Barton acquisition to me is on the list of Tim Connelly's best moves that he's made. I would also add Jeremy Grant to that. Jeremy Grant was acquired from the Oklahoma City Thunder for a first round pick and it was top 10 protected. The pick conveyed in 2020 at number 25. Remember the Thunder were better than expected that season. That was the Nuggets pick that was conveyed to the Thunder. The Thunder were better than expected in the 1920 season, making the playoffs in the bubble season. But the pick ended up being 25, was sent to Oklahoma City. Jeremy Grant came back. Grant had only spent almost two full seasons in Oklahoma City, or I guess he spent a little over two full seasons in Oklahoma City and had just come on the previous season, averaged 14 points a game on 39% shooting for the Thunder in 18-19. And the Nuggets acquired him prior to the season when they went to the conference finals. So he was a big part of the conference finals run. Only started 24 games for them out of the 71 that he played, averaged 12 points per game. The three-point shooting was great too, 39%. They acquired this kind of bouncy 3-and-D-ish guy who primarily played the four, right? He had the ability to play some three, but mostly played the four in Denver and gave up just a first-round pick for a top 6-7 rotation guy for them who had a career year, went on and got paid with a sign-and-trade with the Detroit Pistons the following offseason in the summer of 2020. I should say the offseason of 2020, which wasn't actually in the summer. But Jeremy Grant is just another player in the long line of guys that that Tim Connelly correctly identified as fantastic matches along with Nikola Jokic. It allowed them to play Jokic at the five and play Grant at the four, or play Jokic at the four at times, although that didn't happen very often, but play Jokic at the five and put Grant at the four. You could go all the way back. I mean, the Paul Millsap signing is another example of that, obviously a much longer in the tooth version, but not too dissimilar from Jeremy Grant, a little bit more passing offense inside the arc and that focus versus the athleticism and three-point shooting ability of Jeremy Grant. Although there are a lot of similarities in the overall profile of both Jeremy Grant and Paul Millsap. Jamichael Green's the most recent example of that, where there's this kind of plus rebounding, plus defending, athletic long four that you can put next to Nikola Jokic and kind of shore up some of the areas where Jokic has very limited blind spots, very small blind spots, right? He's a two-time MVP. But that obviously was the goal there. And it was done very well, which leads me to my last point. My last point here is some of those fringe moves. Jeremy Grant doesn't count as a fringe move because that was a significant trade in my mind. But the Paul Millsaps, the Jamichael Greens, even Austin Rivers, who I've never been the biggest fan of, was a big part of what they did the last couple of seasons. And these guys were all brought in on reasonable contracts. Millsap and Green were bigger deals, but both players that you know, a couple of years. They're not guys that were breaking, you know, they weren't breaking news on ESPN when the Nuggets signed a 30, whatever he was, year old Millsap past his prime, or Jermichael Green to a 2-year deal. Green was, both were players, actually, the Wolves were in the running for when the Nuggets signed them. Austin Rivers falls in the category of like more like this year's DeMarcus Cousins and some players like that I talked about the other day. That Tim Connelly obviously has the respect of veteran players that want to come play in Denver, which isn't this, you know, frankly, if we're being honest in terms of free agency and guys looking to win a title, it's not the sexiest market. But if you find the guys that want to be there and fit the roster, guys want to go there. And Tim Connelly and, of course, Michael Malone and the coaching staff were big reasons for that. But those moves and then also the non-headline free agent moves like the Millsap, the Jermichael Green, to a lesser extent, Jeff Green this year, who is a contributor for them. Another player that, you know, I think you could have found other guys to do that role, but Jeff Green fit this team. And I think sometimes it's really easy to just be like, oh, he drafted Jokic and not realize, you know, given especially all the injuries this year, some of the other stuff he's done over the past several years that shored up that roster and made them a perennial contender. I mean, the last 3 years, 4 years, really, they've been in the thick of things in the Western Conference, and Jokic is obviously a huge part of that, also a Connelly draft pick. But it doesn't happen without some of these other moves as well. All right, next I want to look at the moves that weren't positive for Tim Connelly. And in my opinion, while we could rattle off a list, none of them, you know, there's only a couple that you could put on par with. This was as bad of a move as some of these other moves were good moves. I think really you're just looking at a guy who spent like 9 years running an NBA front office. You're going to find a number of things that didn't go perfectly. But let's look at some of those here now. First, though, let's talk about our friends over at Rock Auto. This episode is brought to you by Rock Auto. With the ever-increasing numbers of makes and models, it's now impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts you need. Why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while the person behind the counter orders the parts on their computer, choosing the only brand their warehouse happens to carry? You have a computer with access to rockauto.com, both at home and in your pocket. Save time and money when using Rock Auto. Why choose to spend 30, 50, even 100% more for the same parts from a chain store or car dealership? Rock Auto is a family business serving do-it-yourselfers for over 20 years. Their prices are reliably low for every customer, and they have everything you could possibly need, from brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, to even new carpet. Go explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution to your auto part needs. Go to rockauto.com right now. See all the parts available for your car or truck. Right, Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. All right, a big thanks once again for making Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. Now be sure to go check out the Locked On NBA Big Board with host Raphael Barlow from NBA Draft Junkies and author of the NBA Big Board newsletter. He's joined by Richard Stamen, Sam Ferris, and Leif Thulin, giving fans an in-depth look into the NBA draft, mock draft, player rankings, and of course, big boards. It's free and available wherever you listen to podcasts. The perfect time of year to get on board with the Locked On NBA Big Board show. Of course, we are now officially in draft season. All right, let's talk about some of the things that didn't always go Tim Connelly's way in Denver. Let's start here. So I actually found an article over at denverfan.com. This is the website for The Fan, 104.3 FM in Denver. And I'll be honest, a lot of times these articles that are on radio websites aren't great. It's not always, you know, the best analysis. I actually thought this was a pretty good list after, again, going through the whole list myself of transactions and finding my favorite transactions by the Nuggets, by Tim Connelly over the last nearly decade. I thought this was an interesting list. So I'll just go through this list. This was written by Jake Shapiro over at 104.3 The Fan in Denver. So his number one is the 2017 NBA draft. This one's obvious. This was the Donovan Mitchell selection and trade. But he argues it's not simply trading Donovan Mitchell. He makes the point that I've made previously on the show, which, just a few days ago, which was, we don't know that Mitchell would have necessarily been the guy that the Nuggets selected if they hadn't prearranged the trade with the Jazz. Also, we don't know that Mitchell necessarily becomes the exact same player. You know, there's obviously other factors here. But on top of that, it's the fact that the Nuggets asked the Jazz to select Tyler Lydon, who, of course, was not in Denver even for three seasons. They also acquired Trey Lyles at the same time. He didn't last in Denver either. So neither one of those guys were successful. And the very next pick in that draft after Tyler Lydon was Bam Adebayo, who, of course, is a perennial all-star now, or not yet a perennial all-star, one of the best players in the league the last several seasons, now an all-star, just missed All-NBA this year, or at least received votes for All-NBA third team. And then also after that, shortly after, John Collins, Jared Allen, another all-star. John Collins likely will make an all-star team at some point. He's a guy on basically a max deal now. So all those guys go, and this is a dangerous game because you could take any team's draft pick almost any year and say, look at all the great players that were picked later, but also how many other teams missed on these guys, right? I think it's a little more notable when they moved off of Donovan Mitchell, all-star, and just missed drafting all-stars like Adebayo and Jared Allen, and another really good player in John Collins. I mean, those are a lot of big names right in that same neighborhood of that draft. And that was a big miss, trading Donovan Mitchell and then also passing on those other guys when that pick came up in 2017. So it's hard to not talk about that one, even though it came shortly after, just a couple of years after the Jokic pick. And also in that same draft is when they picked Monty Morris, 2017 second round, which I already talked about as one of his best moves. I would put right up there near, in terms of value, second to the Jokic draft pick over Tim Connelly's tenure. The second thing, and I actually disagree with this one, but Shapiro's got the Yusuf Nurkic trade second on this list because they traded Nurkic to Portland and got Mason Plumlee back. Plumlee was pretty good for them as a backup, and Nurkic probably never makes a lot of sense playing next to Jokic, which is exactly why they traded him. So I guess it was the pick that was attached to it that, again, this is the dangerous game. Pick would have been number 20 in that season. OG Anunoby went 23, who was a player that I guess the Nuggets had some interest in, but we don't know that they would have picked him at 20. So yeah, if you're talking Anunoby and Nurkic for Mason Plumlee, that's significant, but we don't know they would have taken Anunoby. So I take a little bit of issue there. Yeah, the value wasn't great, trading Nurkic and getting back Mason Plumlee, Nurkic and a pick for Mason Plumlee. But in terms of roster balancing and acquiring additional picks, or I'm sorry, roster balancing and just making sure that in that sense, Jokic has the minutes, he is your center, you're acquiring additional assets, and a guy who knows he's going to be backup like Plumlee, that trade isn't awful. It's just not, you know, the greatest value of all time. The 2020 trade deadline, interestingly, is number 3 on this list. Of course, that is exactly when the Timberwolves, that is the very trade in which the Timberwolves acquired Jared Vanderbilt, Malik Beasley, Juancho Hernangomez. And the Nuggets basically just got back a bunch of guys who aren't in the league anymore. They got back Gerald Green. They got back Kata Bates-Diop from the Wolves, Shabazz Napier, Noah Vonleh from the Wolves. All three of those guys were expiring after that season. In fact, Napier was flipped in that same deal to, I believe, Washington. And Napier and Vonleh, after that season, they haven't played in the NBA again. Bates-Diop has been with the Spurs since then. And I've talked about this extensively on the show, but Bates-Diop and Vanderbilt were essentially a side swap in this deal that didn't need to be part of it, but the Wolves clearly wanted Vanderbilt. The Nuggets said, well, maybe KBD can help us in this playoff run as a guy with a little more experience and kind of a developed, more well-rounded skill set, whereas Vando was someone who is primarily in the G League, had the injury history, was kind of a high upside play. The Nuggets didn't need him. He didn't make sense that season. However, all they really got back was that first-round pick, which turned into Zeke Nagy, and the early returns are very good on Zeke Nagy over the first couple seasons of his career. And at the time, Gerald Green was still somebody that contributed for them. But ultimately, the value wasn't great. But this is another roster-balancing move by a team that had an extremely deep roster. Beasley and Hernangomez were on the fringes of their rotation. They got back somebody who they knew would play a little bit more in Gerald Green and a depth guy in KBD and a draft pick. It was just a little bit curious, the timing, given a team that was contending in the Western Conference, being worried about roster-balancing and getting a draft pick. At the same time, that same year, the Nuggets ended up going to the conference finals in the bubble. And so we can, you know, as weird as it might seem, they got a future asset, which turned into Zeke Nagy, and they still made the conference finals. So it's hard to get too upset about that. Again, it doesn't seem like the greatest value, but we're talking about a team that had stockpiled so much talent, they had to go about doing some roster balancing, and that's exactly what Connelly and the front office did at that time. All right, let's close by looking at another five or so of these I don't want to call them negative. I mean, I guess they're neutral to negative moves made by Connelly in the Nuggets front office during his tenure. First, let's talk about our friends over at Truebill. Do you know why free trials renew without your consent? It's a business scam out to get you. Don't let greedy corporations pocket your money. Download Truebill to take control of your subscriptions. Truebill is the new app that helps you identify and stop paying for subscriptions you don't need, want, or simply forgot about. On average, people save up to $720 a year with Truebill. Because companies make subscriptions hard to cancel, Truebill makes it incredibly simple. Just link your accounts and Truebill will cancel your unwanted subscriptions in just one tap. Plus, your Truebill concierge is there when you need them to cancel unwanted subscriptions so that you don't have to. Truebill has over 2 million users and helped them save over $100 million. Just like Matthew B., who says, in a matter of seconds, I saved $660 for the year on my DirecTV bill, saved $120 for the year on my SiriusXM bill, and saved $840 a year on car insurance. Don't fall for subscription scams. Start canceling today at Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. Go right now. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA could save you thousands a year. Truebill.com/LockedOnNBA. All right, let's finish this list of times when Tim Connelly did a made mistakes, I guess, in leading the Denver front office. So we already talked about the, of course, the Donovan Mitchell trade and the guys picked after the pick that was relinquished, Yusuf Nurkic trade, the trade deadline in which the Timberwolves came out looking very strong, acquiring Malik Beasley at that deadline. The 2016 draft is the next on this list. Again, this is at DenverFan.com, written by Jake Shapiro, over at The Fan there. He talks about the 2016 NBA draft when they drafted Malik Beasley and Hernan Gomez. Again, this is another one of those that it's hard to fault. They passed on Pascal Siakam, DeJounte Murray, and Malcolm Brogdon. Of course, now Siakam and Murray have both been all-stars. Brogdon's a very good player. I don't know. And then he talks about how they could have packaged their picks to move up and take Domantas Sabonis or Jakob Poeltl. They still got Jamal Murray in that draft at 7, and they got Malik Beasley and Juancho Hernan Gomez. It's really hard to I think that's a good draft, right? Those are all NBA rotation guys. Murray's a star. Beasley's a starting caliber player. And you're not talking about like generational superstars with Siakam, Murray, and Brogdon, or even Sabonis and Poeltl. They're all useful players. Like, Poeltl doesn't fit what they're trying to do. Sabonis, likely they're not taking him to play with Jokic. At the moment, of course, Jokic wasn't who he is now, but he obviously had tons of talent and clearly the Nuggets believed in him. So again, that's one I would kind of set aside. 2015 draft, this is maybe a little bit different. This is an issue because he picked Emmanuel Mudiay at number 7. Could have taken Devin Booker. There's other guys in the draft that were decent. It wasn't a good draft class though. So it's not a good, this was clearly fall into the bucket of bad moves by Tim Connelly drafting Emmanuel Mudiay. There's no other way to slice it. But again, it's softened by the fact this was kind of a weak draft class as it was. This is, of course, the same year Carl Anthony Towns went first overall. And then there's a couple of contract decisions here. He's got the Wilson Chandler extension. Fine. He was on the backside of his prime, certainly, when he was extended to a four-year, $46 million deal. But it's also one of the reasons why players like Connelly, because he was loyal to Chandler, somebody who'd spent a lot of his career in Denver, and get maybe overpaid slightly to keep him, ended up moving off of him, had to trade a couple of second-round picks to move off of him. Letting Danilo Gallinari walk, I don't also really fault him on this one. They got some minor, I think they got like a trade exception and a pick back or something in a sign-in trade. But Gallo obviously went on to have a great couple of years in LA and then obviously eventually Oklahoma City. This was a tough one because the injury history is one of the reasons they moved off of him. So again, falls into the not great category, but far from catastrophic. And then he's got a couple others on here that I don't think are a big deal, like re-signing Will Barton a second time. I love Will Barton. I guess I'm biased here, but I don't know that that was the worst move. Signing Facu Campazzo, who interestingly, the Wolves were the runner-up to sign Campazzo in international free agency a couple of years ago. But signing him to the biannual exception, that's a drop in the bucket in terms of salary moves. Not a big deal. He was obviously a big part of what they did a couple of years ago in the playoffs. And then finally, he has not skipping steps. Basically, the Nuggets didn't swing for the fences ever, except for the Aaron Gordon trade, which I didn't mention earlier. Obviously, that was a good trade for the Nuggets and a timely trade for them. I don't know. I think not swinging for the fences is kind of not really a fair thing to blame Connelly for because this has still been a really good team and Jokic is already your superstar. So, what else are you doing here besides building a sustainable roster around him? So, yeah, I mean, we could talk about the 17 draft. We could talk about the Nurkic trade. We could talk about the 20 trade. To me, the biggest ones were the 17 draft, the trading of Donovan Mitchell, agreeing to trade him, and then not doing a very good job with the pick they got back. And then also the Moutier draft pick are the big ones. To a lesser extent, the 2020 trade deadline and the 2016 draft. But really, like, if those are your worst moves, I mean, let me introduce you to the Timberwolves franchise history, right? This is not, again, like I said, the whole list is far from catastrophic. Connolly did a fantastic job in Denver. And the moral of the story is you stack up the first segment and the best moves by Tim Connolly to the worst moves. He's got five best moves that are all better than his second worst move, right? You take out the Donovan Mitchell trade, and there's not another move that's as bad as the other five moves I listed were good. Tim Connolly is a fantastic executive, did an awesome job in a very similarly sized market with similar resources in Denver. Now the Wolves have ownership that's going to give them even more resources, and the sky really seems to be the limit for this Timberwolves team. They have all their future draft picks, including a couple of extra second rounders this year. We know what he can do with second rounders. It's going to be a lot of fun to have Tim Connolly running the Timberwolves. It is really kind of the best way to sum that up. Again, going to have some Denver guests on here soon. We'll talk more Tim Connolly. We're going to talk more draft in the coming days. That's all we have for the show today. Thank you again for listening to Locked On Wolves and for making Locked On Wolves your first listen every day. Of course, the show is free and available everywhere, including YouTube. You can also find the show on Apple, Google, Spotify, Odyssey, wherever you get podcasts. You can follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and at BBeacon. That's two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. Of course, Locked On Wolves is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. You can also make Locked On NBA your second listen, from the first jump ball, the play-in, to the last possession of the finals, just a couple of weeks away now. Locked On experts take you deep inside the playoffs with insight and analysis affecting all 30 teams. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.